Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Wonder Podcast, the podcast where we break down and review films all in one big, long, unbroken take. I'm Austin Archer, and with me, as always, is my childhood next-door neighbor and my lifelong best friend,
Kramer England.
Okie dokie, we're late to the party.
We are a little late, yeah.
The internet has already been throwing all the hype at this movie. People really like this movie. We went and saw Marty Supreme. Who is it? Is it Benny or Josh's? I can never
remember. Josh Safdie did Marty Supreme. Benny Safdie did The Smashing Machine.
Yeah. Weirdly, this is another one where I'm like, and again, you can go watch our spoiler-free thoughts over on our episode of One or First Thoughts if you just want to know general thoughts. If you don't want spoilers for this movie yet, if you haven't seen it yet, you can watch our spoiler free thoughts over there. Don't watch this one because we're going to be talking about spoilers, but this is one where I once again feel kind of like on the outs and like in the minority of what seems to be the most like the film critic community, if we're even a part of that. But it's like critics love this movie, like film fans love this movie, and I'm like, as it sits right here, I like Benny's movie more than Josh's. Like,
interesting.
I like The Smashing Machine. I really connected to that movie, and I had a really hard time locking in and connecting to what Josh was trying to do with this film. But tell me about your experience with this movie.
My experience, I went with a couple friends, and I had a great time. I really liked this movie. Mm-hmm. Now, I thought that The Smashing Machine was great. I thought that The Rock did an amazing job in that. But I think I was expecting something more like this, in the sense that I thought it was going to be a little more intense. And this movie was like tense the entire time.
Yeah.
But I kind of love that. Like, I kind of love the like, oh my gosh, how is he going to get out of this?
Yeah.
Or like, oh my gosh, this can't get any worse. Oh my gosh, it just got worse. Like every 5 minutes, you know, why are you doing that? Anyway.
Yeah.
It was fun for me to watch that. I don't think it's I think the technical side and the performances kind of outweigh the overall story of this movie, because the story's not it's not like it's all over the place, but it's like there's so many different things that are going on and like so many different avenues that he takes. That it's kind of not as linear as you might think. So it did kind of like drag in that sense that it was a little too long.
Yeah.
But I still really liked it. I think I like this one. I liked this one better than I did The Smashing Machine.
I think most people did. That's why I'm definitely like in the, like, I'm like, this is one where, again, I'm like, I might need to just come back to it later. It might've just found me on a weird night maybe just because of all the hype or something, but
it could be. Sorry, go ahead.
I'd heard from so many people the comparison to Uncut Gems that like this is very similarly where it's just like, it never lets you go. The main character can't get out of his own way. He's his own worst enemy, and he's the plot's own worst enemy. Like every time you think that maybe he's gonna like pull through, he does something to sabotage his own journey. And it's this really like frustrating but also intense and exciting and exhilarating thing to watch, even though you're the whole time you're just kind of going like, don't do that. I really like Uncut Gems. I think it's a fantastic movie, and I had heard from so many people like that's what this movie is, except the magic trick of this film is Josh getting you to actually root for that character though. And like kind of like fall in love with that character, even though it's a deeply flawed character, even though Marty's deeply problematic in many ways and flawed.
Yeah.
You're still like, I'm pulling for this guy. I've heard a lot of people just talk about like the undeniable charisma of the character and the way that Timothée Chalamet plays him. And this is where I was having a hard time connecting, because I was just sort of like going through the film going like, I don't really like this guy.
Yes, I was wondering if that was the case. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's what I feel like, whether the movie works for you or not is like, are you won over by Marty or not?
Yeah.
And I wasn't, but yeah.
I think that is totally valid, because the whole time I was like, this guy's not a good guy.
No.
Like, do I like this person? I mean, he makes some pretty crass remarks and pretty like pretty horrible things that he says. But I mean, the thing that he says about Auschwitz was like, oh my gosh, like,
yeah. What?
And then the thing he says about, the one guy, Rockwell's son.
Yeah.
Like he lashes out, and I didn't really love him as a character, but I understood what he wanted. And I went over this a little bit in my first thoughts, which is like, I understand what he wants. I can root for that. Like I want him to get it. And then in the end, he really does have just a tiny bit of like redemption. So I think that helped me with it, but I totally understand he's not a very likable character.
Yeah.
He's not someone that you can really root for. Like, yeah, I really want you to get it. It's kind of like, I want you to get it for this all to be over and like, yeah, for your own benefit, because I know what you want. But I mean, it's totally valid. He's a hard character to connect with.
Well, and in short, you know, again, this is the spoiler version of our talk. So if you don't want to hear spoilers, go to the other version. But, in short, this is following the formula of many a sports drama where our hero character or characters, whether it's a team or an individual, loses early on, comes close to victory. He goes and competes in this international competition in Europe, or like, I think it's like in London, or
it's in London. I think it's in London. Yeah.
And he loses in the championship round to this Japanese player who's clearly
like deaf as well, which I thought was interesting.
Which that's the thing, is this Endo character is like very sympathetic. As the like bad guy who like Marty needs to conquer, I'm like, Endo's great. There's nothing about like a lot of times in sport, but I get that. Like what Josh Safdie's doing in this film is subverting a lot of the tropes of the sports drama, which I appreciate to a certain degree. Cause in real life, the heroes of like the sports world aren't always like the good guys necessarily. But usually in a sports drama, what you see is they'll find a way to somehow, think about like the way Iceland is portrayed in the Mighty Ducks movies, that it's just like, just because they're Iceland, they're like, they play dirty. Yeah. And like they, or even just like the other teams in Remember the Titans are all racist.
Yeah,
of course. Yeah. They're all easier.
Yeah. It's easier for you to root for the guy that you want or the team that you want. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Or like even to a certain degree, it's like Apollo Creed is a likable character, but he's a showboat and he's very arrogant. Whereas Rocky's just very like humble and just happy to be there.
Yeah.
And Rocky's not a smack talker. He's not a trash talker. So when Apollo's like, I'm going to mess this man's face up, Rocky's just like, I don't know why he's so mad at me. And you're like, I like that. But like, this is a scenario where like the only, like most table tennis players seem like nice chaps, like really, respectable people. And the only person that is unlikable is our main character. And to the degree where like his main nemesis in the sport is just kind of confused by how aggressive he is. The guy's just like, why are you like this? Like, calm down.
I get that. Yeah. I think it was, this is the problem with having a main character that's not really likable. David Fincher does this all the time. He did it with The Social Network.
I talked about The Social Network in my first.
Did you? Okay. Yep. Yes. Yeah. And it's hard to, I mean, especially now with hindsight, it's even harder to like that character in The Social Network. But like, he does pull it off in that movie, I felt like, because he has Eduardo, who you kind of can attach to. But
okay, I gotta jump in here because we just watched this. Olivia had never seen it.
And
after we watched Marty Supreme, I was thinking about The Social Network, because I was like that's another movie where like the trick is, can we get you to care about this kind of unlikable protagonist? Exactly. So I was like, and I wanted to know, like, how is this movie held up with everything that we know about Mark Zuckerberg over the last 16 years.
Right.
And I actually think that the movie holds up.
It does.
Incredibly well.
Oh yeah.
And I think that like what Aaron Sorkin is saying with his screenplay there, and it's like one of the great endings where it's just like this character, first of all, you know, the ending of the movie from the outset, we all know that Mark Zuckerberg wins and that he becomes one of the wealthiest people in the world.
Yeah.
But to end the film with him just trying to send a friend request to his girlfriend who dumped him in the first scene of the film.
Yep.
And it's refreshing.
A sad ending.
Yeah. And then it's and to realize that like the character of, cause at the end of it, like I kind of looked at Olivia and I was like, so what do you think about that character? Like,
yeah.
And she knows who Mark Zuckerberg is and all this stuff. And she was like, see, but in this movie, not necessarily, we're not, get rid of the real life.
Yes, yes.
In this movie, though, I can, like, there's something about the way that Mark is portrayed where I understand that, like, he's just, like, nothing matters more to him than just being perceived as being cool. Right. And that's kind of the sad thing is he's just trying to do what he thinks Sean Parker would do. Or he's just trying to, you know, and, like, and sometimes, like when he gets one up on people, like the Winklevoss twins, you're like, I kind of like that. These rich, like tall, handsome jocks that were like just trying to, they were like, oh, let's use this nerd to program our website. And he's like, you know what? I have a better idea. I'm just going to make my own website. And, you know, and like,
which he does steal.
Right. But also, it's like I think in his brain, he's kind of like, you guys were stupid. Yeah. You guys were stupid to come to me with this idea without having me sign like an NDA or sign like a, you know, like, or like a non-compete clause or something like that. Like in his mind, he's like, sorry, I beat you guys. Like I had a better idea than your idea. Their idea was Harvard.edu. And like his idea was like, how about all the colleges in the world? Yeah. And, you know, and like to a certain degree, like even though Mark Zuckerberg is kind of a jerk, there's that last line in the movie too where Rashida Jones goes, you know, you're not an a-hole, Mark. Yeah. You're just trying so hard to be.
Yeah.
And it's this, even to this day, where you're like, with everything that's gone on with Mark Zuckerberg in the last 16 years of his life, it still feels like Mark Zuckerberg is just like, please everyone think I'm cool. And like, it doesn't matter how much money he makes. He's just like, can I please have friends? Like, you know, and which is sympathetic. Like there's something about like the humanity of this, like really autistic, really smart, socially kind of inept guy just trying to like have friends who all the money in the world can't buy him a friend.
Right.
And I feel like that movie pulls it off. And that was with Marty Supreme. I was like, I think it's the same idea of like, a guy who's like kind of a little bit of a dweeb, but his thing is like, comes from a lower class family from the slums in New York. Yeah. And it's kind of like, even though he's kind of a little bit of a loudmouth and a little bit of like an arrogant jerk sometimes, can we get you to root for his journey and be pulling for him?
Right.
And I think a lot of people seem to be like, it totally worked. It got me. And my thing was, I just, by the end of the movie, I was like, I don't even like the way that he finally gets the win on Endo, that he just kind of like throws a little tantrum. And then Endo's like, fine, I'll play you again. And then he like Barrett beats him and he's like, yes, I won. And it's like, you won like one game out of like six games that you played him in. Like, I don't know. It's kind of like, I don't know, dude. Like,
I get that. I get that. And what I was going to say, which is interesting because, so the other Fincher film that I actually just watched.
Yeah.
I watched it right before I went to see Marty Supreme. I believe I can't, I don't know. Is The Killer. Have you seen The Killer?
I love The Killer.
Oh, you do?
Oh, I love The Killer.
Yeah. I didn't love it.
I had such a good time.
Did you really? Okay.
Yeah, interesting. I love it.
Just cause like he's also not a very likable character. I mean, I get what he's doing. I get why he wants to do it. But I also just didn't feel like the motivation was really that much for me to like really root for him.
Yeah.
Like for certain people, I was like, I can see that. I can see why you're doing this. But others, I was like, I don't know about that. You just killed the secretary and she seemed like a really nice lady.
Yeah.
Like he does.
He's definitely not a good guy.
No.
He's a bad guy.
Yeah. He's a bad guy. And so it's interesting. We have these three movies that are doing the same thing, right? Which is like when you have a character who just on the surface is doing something that's not likable, you have to have other characters that are either worse than that person for you to like them. So if you're trying to get us to root for him, you need to do that. You need to have another person, or the other people are worse right? Like in Ocean's 11, we can root for somebody who's trying to steal something because what they're trying to steal, the person they're trying to steal from is a horrible person.
Yeah.
And they're cool and they're like nice and they're not hurting anybody except for this one person that we all think is a jerk. Right. Yeah. So that's how you get people to like them. So in these movies, these three movies that we're talking about, the line is very thin on who's worse than who. Like Endo, I totally agree. He is way more, you have no reason to not like this character.
Yeah.
Like other than the fact that like maybe he was in the war, right? But he's also fighting for his country. Japan and America are on good terms at this point. Like there's sure. not really a reason to not like him.
No.
But I also didn't ever see Endo as the antagonist of the film.
Right. He's not.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
He's Marty's nemesis. Marty's like the goal yeah. for Marty, the entire film is like,
him.
I have to get back and beat yes. Endo to prove that I'm the best in the world. Right. And even when he wins, it's like Endo's been playing people all day long. Yeah, he's at an event where yeah, like people yeah. wait in line and he just plays game after game after game after game with like, yeah. he's played like 60 matches that day. And Marty like, has to throw one match because that's the deal that he's made with Mr. Yeah, Wonderful yeah. And yeah. you know, and then but then it's like he's like, no, I don't want to throw the match, you know what, play me again, and
yeah yeah
then
yeah.
barely, but it's still like, I don't know, man, I think Endo's better at ping pong than you, sorry.
Yeah yeah no, and I get that. So yeah. I never had my interest though was in what is he called, Mr. Fan or the Shark Tank guy,
Kevin O'Leary.
Yeah, Kevin O'Leary. Yeah, yeah. He was the one that was like, he's kind of slimy, but he's also not really the worst guy.
That's the other thing. Is this like exactly really
that bad?
It's like
he is also sleeping with his wife. So
yeah, and it would be one thing if like the movie showed us that Kevin O'Leary was like a really bad husband to Gwyneth yes. Paltrow. That yeah. it was like, oh, which Gwyneth Paltrow.
A little, but not really.
We hear her say like, yeah. oh, he's given me this necklace, like one necklace yeah. for every year of misery. But it's also like, nobody forced you to be in this marriage. You ostensibly signed up for like a paycheck. Like you got yeah, into yeah. like a security deal where like you married a very wealthy man and he's taking care of you. But like, there's nothing in the film that we see that suggests that he's like not supportive of her.
Yeah.
That he's like,
I mean, he puts on a play for her.
He's producing stuff for her to act in. They don't do enough in the movie to be like, oh yeah, I don't like that guy. It's just like, oh, he's just the husband of the woman that I'm sleeping with.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
like, yeah. it's like, well, then you're the bad guy again.
I know. He is. And I think honestly, like I totally get it. I totally get why you wouldn't like Marty.
Yeah.
And I didn't really like him, but I wanted him to succeed. And I think it really ultimately comes down to the fact that he's very convicted in what he wants.
Yeah.
He's very much wants this to happen. And you admire his, you know, his determination to get things done. And he is really good at what he does.
Yeah.
But it's also, that was fine for me, but there's also some hurdles that some people just can't get over. So I totally understand why you wouldn't like him. And I was actually wondering like, oh man, I was wondering if you were going to like, what did you think of the performance? I know you didn't like the character, but how do you think Timothée Chalamet did in his performance? Coming really from quick, an actor that I think you could add a lot more to.
Really quick, I want to add just one yeah, thing yeah. to what you were saying about like the killer and like yeah. movies where it's like if you've got an unlikable protagonist, you've kind of got to put yeah. other people. Because like I do think that like yeah, like The Social Network, it's like Sean Parker, you can see that he's like a bad influence on Mark yeah. Zuckerberg, and yeah. and I actually think that like a lot of these like cocky, arrogant, wealthy Harvard kids come off as more unlikable than not. Eduardo is the victim yes. of the film yeah. Yeah. but you're right, it's like putting characters in there that it's like, well, I actually kind of like it when Mark mm. gets, or you know, or when like the lawyers in the hearings are like trying to like be like, do I have your full attention, Mr. Zuckerberg, and he's like, no yeah. you have the minimum amount of my, you know, right, did I right. sufficiently answer your condescending question, like mm. that, like I like when he like as the kid in the room is like, I'm wealthier than every person in this room, and like I you know yeah. like yeah. but And in The Killer, it's like Michael Fassbender, yeah, he kills that secretary and that's bad. But for the most part, he exists in a very brutal world where it's like kill or be killed.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
When the syndicate that he works for turns on him, it's like, oh, okay, you guys just did a really bad, you know, like my favorite part of The Killer is when he gets into the guy's house that hired the people to come after him.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he just like walks up to him and explains to him like how he got into his apartment. He's like, so I just want you to understand, like, I can get here anytime I want.
Yeah.
And he's like, so if I have to come back here, I'm going to throw you down your elevator shaft. And he's like, you know, like, he's just like, so don't make me come back here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, like, but it's like, he's dealing with bad people. Marty Supreme is populated with a lot of really sympathetic characters. Like that aren't Marty. Like I think Tyler, the Creator's character as just like a cab driver who's just like trying to make his way in New York is really sympathetic. I even think like his mom played by Fran Drescher, who's just trying to have a relationship with her son. And he's just like so annoyed with her. I definitely think the woman who's his baby mama, Odessa, like it is like he just treats her like crap the whole movie. And she's such a sympathetic character. His cousin, who's just like trying to like help him out with, you know, making the ping pong balls. And I just feel like the movie is populated with all these like really likable characters. Yeah. And Marty's like one of the only ones that's just like, why is this guy the guy that I'm meant to be rooting for here?
Right.
But anyway, okay. Sorry. Your question, the performance. Right. Okay. This is the big thing is everyone's like, I mean, he's got to take all the awards home. Right. Like, and that's the other aspect of this movie that I was sort of, I kept waiting for it. I kept waiting for like, when is the performance going to be like, knock me out. I don't want to be misunderstood here. Timothy Chalamet, in my opinion, is where he is right now in show business for a reason. Mm-hmm. I've always been impressed by him since the first time I saw him. When I saw him in, I think it was Lady Bird was the first movie I saw him in, and I was like, who's that kid? I was like, that kid's good. And then I saw him in Call Me By Your Name, and he really kind of took my breath away in that movie. It really kind of blew me away. And for my money, if I'm ranking like top Chalamet performances, it's Call Me By Your Name, it's Dune Part Two, and it's A Complete Unknown before it's this one. Like I just was sort of like at the end of it, I was like, really? Of all, everything he's done over the last 10 years, like this is the one that everyone's like, oh, wow. And even he's saying that he thinks it's some of his best. Me personally, like the transformation that he does in Dune Part Two, where he becomes Lizan Al-Ghaib, and he's like that scene when he takes the stage in front of the Fremen, and he
awesome.
I'm always just like, dude, like that's so cool. Like the way that he like steps into the power, it's amazing. And it's like something that like I think I always wanted to see from like Luke Skywalker. I always wanted to see like you take that next step into, you know, but it's not that I think the performance is bad in Marty Supreme. It's just that I felt like it was just sort of like, yeah, he's a good actor. Why would he not be? I don't see how this is like the performance of the year personally.
Right. No, yeah. I think that makes sense. I think it really does make it hard when you don't like the character.
Yeah.
And it's because I think I agree. I mean, Dune 2, man, that performance is pretty amazing. And I haven't seen A Complete Unknown yet, so I can't speak to that, but I was still impressed. I thought he did a great job. It'll be interesting to see.
I think the physicality is really impressive. Like the amount that he has to do physically. I think that, I think the whole, like, I'm going to wear prescription contact lenses to ruin my vision. So I think I'm like, come on, man.
So crazy.
That stuff just, I think I have a hard time with stuff like that. I'm just like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, but I just don't see enough from, the way people talk about this performance is they're just like, oh, I mean, he's so good. And so I don't know. It's like, I watched Die My Love last night, which is a very kind of psychedelic film from Lynn Ramsey. Right. It was much more psychedelic and trippy and heady than I thought it would be. It's that movie with Jennifer Lawrence and Robert Pattinson. But I sat there watching Jennifer Lawrence in that film, and I just kept saying over and over again, she's so good. Mm-hmm. She's so good. And it would, she just was like really like blowing me away with how mm-hmm. fearless she is as an actor and how amazing everything she was doing in the film was. And I wanted that from the Chalamet performance. And I just was kind of like, yeah, he's good. He's always good. Mm-hmm. That was sort of my takeaway.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes sense. It makes sense. Yeah. I think it'll be very interesting to see what happens at the Academy Awards, especially since it's, which I talked about this in my first thoughts, it's the Safdie brothers kind of against each other, possibly in the best actor category.
Yeah.
You know, with
you mean best director.
No, no. I mean, their actors are probably going to go against each other
right.
in the best actor category. So,
yes.
And I don't know if the Smashing Machine will get much awards outside of The Rock. Maybe. I don't know though. I could be way off. Either way, it'll be interesting to see them go against each other.
That's the thing is like, I get it. It's not a particularly like super stacked year when it comes to that specific category. Yes, yeah. And I think we both predicted this when we saw the Smashing Machine, that it was like, he's probably going to get nominated,
yeah,
but not win. But like, cause that's just kind of crazy. But mm-hmm. I did think Dwayne Johnson gave the best performance of his career.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Movie. Yeah.
But that's also not saying a whole lot. No. Like I would say the performance that I think is being overlooked by everyone is Michael B. Jordan is like, let's come back to that one. And I think that he had to do more and
it's true,
you know, and I think that I think it gets overlooked because maybe it's a little more subtle and but you know,
that is a good performance though. He is an amazing actor.
Yeah. And also, I think
I hadn't even thought about that, seems like it probably is but then when you think about it, yeah, it's really good. But,
and this is one that is such a long shot, but it's just such a movie that is like made for me is Ethan Hawke in Blue Moon. Like that's one where the whole movie I was just going like, oh, Ethan Hawke is just destroying this. Absolutely killing this. Yeah. And I just watching Timothée Chalamet, I just was like, yeah, he's good. He's always good.
Yeah.
And I was watching A Complete Unknown. I really was like, wow.
Yeah.
He's really doing it. He's really doing it. You know?
Interesting.
So I don't know. Yeah.
All right. Well, should we get into the movie a little bit more? There's actually.
Yeah, sure. We can talk about like Gwyneth Paltrow because I talked about this in my first thoughts. I talked about how, you know, in Uncut Gems, it's like, it's this thing of like every time the character gets close to fixing his debt issues, he keeps like adding it. But that's what the movie's about, is how this guy just can't get out of his own way. Mm-hmm. And Marty Supreme is similar. It's like his goal is, I've got to get back to this competition to redeem myself for this loss that I had.
Yeah.
And all of the different things that he has to do along the way to make money and, you know, get back in the good graces of the international table tennis community and all of this stuff. But it started to feel to me a little bit like the screenplay was just sort of like, God, we need to think of more things to happen to him.
Right,
and it just felt like some of the stuff was just kind of random and not necessarily connect. Cause there are themes here in this movie that I'm actually very interested in. I think that I heard one person say this, that like, it's a film about growing up. It's a film about becoming an adult. And I was like, oh, that's an interesting concept, that we're looking at a young man who's got the aspirations of a young man who's like, I'm gonna be the best in the world, I'm gonna be great, I'm gonna be on Wheaties boxes, you know, but it's about him needing to be sort of humbled by the world so that he can accept the role of fatherhood and so that he can do something a little that requires a little more humility. And I was like, oh, that's a really interesting reading of the film. I wish the film leaned into that theme a little harder. Or another theme that I heard people talking about is, it's about how when you want a certain level of success, you kind of have to lean into a certain level of delusion delusional, you know, way of looking at yourself. But the razor's edge of like sometimes that can be really charming and impressive, like when he does like the apple trick from the hotel when he's talking to you know. And sometimes it can look really desperate, like when he's begging Kevin O'Leary outside of his car, please give me another chance.
Yeah.
And though that it's a fine line between like really like really charming confidence and really cringy desperation. And that's a theme that I think rides through the movie that I think is interesting. But some of the stuff that happens, like the whole dog saga and like the and like so the weird. You know, like the bathtub falling through the ceiling.
Through the ceiling.
Is a thing that I'm just like, this isn't necessarily like our care. Marty's not doing this. Right. It's just sort of like the movie's just sort of throwing extra things at him.
Right, right.
And I think I would prefer it if it was always like because he did this now happened, where instead of just random stuff like, oh, and it turns out the guy whose dog you landed on is like a really scary gangster guy.
I get that the a lot of the themes that I picked up, which I thought I am very interested to hear if you thought of this at all, because I picked up a lot of like religious, more specifically Jewish themes. And a lot of it is almost a story of, you know, the Jewish people in a lot of ways. Cause I mean, there's a lot, he is Jewish. He's very, his family is very religious, but there's a lot of like, biblical things that I connect, that I kind of thought of. Right. And like, I talked to my friend at work about it and he got the same things. And I don't know if these were all absolutely intentional, but I thought a lot of them were pretty apparent. I mean, so you're talking about the dog, right? Which that whole thing is like, what the heck is happening? Like, why? Yeah. How is a bathtub falling through the ceiling?
Yeah,
that came so far out of left field. I get it. Just feels super random. But I mean, it's also the dog's name is Moses.
Yeah,
right. And there's this theme of, you know, Moses was put into. You know, the whole Moses story and taking people out of, you know, taking the Jewish people out of their bondage, taking them to the promised land type thing. So there's that whole thing with him, right? He's taking himself to his own promised land.
Right? Yeah.
He's trying to get himself to where he needs to be. And it's not like that's like super strong, but that just kind of, the fact that the dog's name is Moses, I don't think is a mistake.
No. But there's also like the post-Holocaust, this is another thing about Marty is it feels like in some ways, even though he wears a Star of David around his neck and all this stuff, in some ways, like that, the comment that he makes about like the guy that was in Auschwitz and like the comments that he makes about Kevin O'Leary's son.
Yeah.
In some ways it feels like he's like trying to be like, I don't want to I don't want to be associated with the Jews that were dominated in the war or needed rescuing. Yeah. I want to be like bigger than that. And it feels, you know, but then there are these moments where like, I do like him chipping off the rock and the piece of the pyramid and giving it to his mom
in Egypt and saying that we built this. Right.
Yeah.
I like which that's the other thing. And then like there's the very beginning of this movie, man. This made me. So, I mean, the beginning of the movie, he's selling shoes and then a woman comes in and him and the woman are, you know, they're having an affair, which I didn't realize she was married until later on.
Yeah.
But this whole sequence of seeing the sperm going to the egg and fertilizing the egg. Do you remember what else that is in a movie?
Look Who's Talking.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought immediately about Look Who's Talking.
That's
and which also why did they start Look Who's Talking with this sperm going into the egg?
That's like, what I thought.
Yeah, like
it's like this is a kids movie, like this is a family movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And they start, so I was like, that's just, it made me just think like, why did they start Look Who's Talking with a bunch of sperm going woo, yeah, woo.
Yeah, because it's talking sperm too.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Look Who's Talking is all about how like even young infants have like a fully adult inner monologue, and apparently
Bruce Willis,
of Bruce Willis, or even when you are literally a sperm pre fertilization, pre zygote, you're still just like, oh, here we go, rock on.
I don't know if, I mean, he had to know what he was doing, right? Like that's such a famous Look Who's Talking thing opening, but
well, there is the Look Who's Talking is it an 80s film or is it an early 90s?
It might be early 90s. It might be early 90s.
Like 89 or 90, but
yeah.
But there is this aesthetic thing in this film of the film takes place in the 1950s in New York City, but the soundtrack, the needle drops are all these like Tears for Fears, 1980s, which I personally, I actually really dug that.
Yeah, I thought like it worked.
It works really nicely. And maybe the Look Who's Talking intro. This also was like a very Uncut Gems thing. Like Uncut Gems did this, like would do the thing where like it would zoom in on like the rock, the gem, and go into it and then like get lost in like a whole. So like this opening with like the sperm going to the egg sort of reminded me of that. But you know,
It was, but I thought it was kind of funny thinking of that.
The visual transition of the egg into a ping pong ball, I thought was kind of cool. And
like, which that, I mean, it goes into kind of this whole, again, this religious theme of it. That's his baby. The ping pong is his baby. Like that's what he wants. That's what he is striving for the entire movie. And then again, with Moses having that. And then in the end, Marty gets what he needs, right? Which is an actual baby, an actual child to bring him to what kind of like you, your friend said with this being a movie about growing up, right?
Yeah.
Taking the responsibility. Because when he does win the match in the end, he seems a little unfulfilled, right? Like,
as he should be, like
as
I said,
he should be, yes, as he should be.
And he didn't really win. You didn't win anything.
Yeah. And he goes anyway. I thought that was super interesting. I thought, and there are a few other things that I thought were interesting, and I don't think any of these are like meant to be saying anything super specific, but I just thought it was interesting that Josh Safdie would have that in there. And and I think there's a lot. It is about growing up. It is about religion. It is about the Jewish faith. I mean, I believe they are, the Safdies are Jewish.
Oh, and yeah. It's a very Jewish, and it's a very like New York Jewish movie.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Look, from a technical standpoint, and I said this in my first thoughts thing, I couldn't in any world say that this is like a poorly made movie. Like the cinematography is fantastic. I thought like the costume design and the production design was all fantastic. I thought everyone was doing good work. Like everybody in the principal cast was doing good work. It's just that like the thing of this movie that it hinges on is like, are you going to be like charmed by this character or not? And speaking of, so this affair that he's having, this is another thing, is like the movie almost sets up that like, well, but the man that this woman is married to is kind of a jerk. And it's like, yeah, but then when the more you get to know about him, it's like, well, it seems like he's kind of a jerk because he knows that his wife is cheating on him and he's annoyed about it. And then she pretends that he's been abusing her. She lies and puts a fake black eye on her face. And Marty goes and clocks this guy in the face with a ping pong trophy. And I thought, as soon as that happened, I was like, oh, he just murdered that guy. I was like, 100% that guy's dead, but he doesn't. But I was still just like, and then it turns out like, nope, didn't even need to do that because he'd never, you know, but it is like, he yells at her. He's not nice to her, but
He's verbally abusive. I thought that was a very interesting part of the movie as well, because you have, I really like this movie because of all the things that it's trying to say or the things that it might be implying. And I think it also, it really challenged, I like when movies challenge you to look at the deeper meaning of something. Now, I don't know, this is what I found interesting, because I don't know exactly what Josh Safdie is trying to say with this, because his mom lies to him like really bad. Oh, I've got to take your mom to the hospital. And then Fran Drescher's like, tell him my face is gray and I'm going to go to the hospital. I might not make it, you know? And she's like, so she's like doing all these things to really manipulate him, which for me, like, his mom is trying to connect, but also doing it in the worst possible way of doing something that's really not okay to, you know, manipulate your son into trying to come back. So, and then this girl, I keep forgetting her name. What is the character's name? Rachel. So Odessa plays Rachel. Rachel is like, I thought at first, oh, she's completely sympathetic. Like, She could do no wrong, but then it turns out she's also lying and doing the exact same thing that his mom does to try and get him to love her and to get. Anyway, so I'm kind of like, wow, that's an interesting.
Well, that I do think that that's true, that he kind of lives in a world of hustlers.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a thing where like the way that he was raised, it's like, hey, like hustling's what we do.
Yeah.
Like the way that you get by is like, if you got to tell a little white lie to like, know, and it is like, you know, like again, that's that New York element of it too.
Yeah.
Figuring out the angles and figuring you know, like, one of my favorite sequences in the movie. I do like when him and Tyler, the creator, go out and hustle the guys at the.
Oh, that was fun. That was awesome. Yeah.
But like, that's a sequence where I'm like, this is a really good, like, for this character to, for us to learn of like how he and this guy make a quick buck or two. I like seeing the way that they run the hustle, and then the guys catching up to them down the road once they realize they've been swindled and been hustled, and the way that, like, you know, like that's an event that feels like, Our characters have some agency in it, but like, yeah, like the bathtub falling through the ceiling onto a dog of a guy who's a gangster just feels kind of like it happens to him rather than he's a participant in it.
Yeah.
And then on top of that being like, oh, and now the dog has been taken in by Penn Jillette. Which also, like, I don't know about like what Benny Safdie's like weird fixation is with just like casting weird people and just being like, I don't know what it is. I'm just like, why is Kevin O'Leary in this movie? Why is Penn Jillette in this movie? Yeah. And it just seems like Benny Safdie's just kind of like, or Josh.
Well, they both do it.
Yeah, they both like to do it. They both just like to be like, hey, what if this person's in the movie? And it's like, okay, you know.
I mean, in The Smashing Machine, the other UFC guy was a real UFC. Yeah, it is weird that they do that. In a way, especially with Penn Jillette, I was totally taken out of the movie. I was like, is that who I think it is?
Yeah.
Like, why is he in this movie? Like, it was so out of left field. Sometimes it takes you out a little bit.
Yeah. But then we should talk a little bit about Gwyneth Paltrow's character. She plays this sort of aging movie star and stage actress who's married to Kevin O'Leary's character, and she also has an affair with Marty, who kind of charms her. But this, I've heard some people say this too, and I'm kind of like, maybe it's sort of true, even though the Kevin O'Leary of it all is like, plays a factor later on, but it's sort of like, if you take her character out and their relationship out, it doesn't really affect anything. Like, sure, we have the one scene where he tries to steal a necklace off of her, and it turns out it's just stage jewelry, but then, like, when she comes back to give him the real necklace, they get, like, that doesn't work either, and so it's like, whatever he's trying to do with her just kind of keeps getting thwarted, and that whole thing is just, I don't know, but maybe it's just another thing for, to just show how he's just working any angle he can all the time.
I think you could, it's a very interesting point. The thing that I saw it as going into the religious aspect again, and maybe I'm reaching, which is fine if I am, but he starts out and he's like, hey, I'm going to make this apple appear. Right. And which I thought was, you know, kind of funny. But an apple, you know, like what Adam and Eve having the apple, the apple is temptation, right? Kind of giving into temptation and things like that. And that for him is almost her. She is the temptation. She's kind of what he wants and what he wants to be. I really did. I mean, if you take out Gwyneth Paltrow, the movie would probably still be as good, but I also really like the fact that she always called him out on who he was as a person that nobody else is able to do. She's like, you're a liar. Like when he comes in, he's like, I stole this from you, but I'm going to give it back. And she's like, no, you stole it. And you thought that you could sell it, but then you realized it was costume jewelry. So you came back to try and get a real, you know, to get something for me. And she sees right through him.
That's right? Good.
So,
yeah.
So, I mean, it was, that scene was amazing. I loved that. But I think there's also just this aspect of like, he's giving in to all these things that he wants when he shouldn't, right? Like she represents something, and I haven't fully figured out what it is, but she's this part. He's got this, you know, he's got Rachel, who's more in line with what he should have. She's Jewish. She's a part of his community. He could marry her. Well, he couldn't marry her at that time, but you know, that's kind of like what he should have. But then there's this other life that he wants with Gwyneth Paltrow and being really rich and just having it all and kind of getting what he wants. But that's not really what he needs, you know? Yeah. So it's kind of that her position in the movie is almost more of a thematic one of what, you know, the want and the need scenario of it all. And I think it is a good point. I mean, you definitely could take her out and the movie would still work, but I like what she did to the character and seeing through him and kind of making him realize that, like, dude, you're not fooling me. Like, I know exactly what you're doing. And that was exactly what he was doing, was trying to get money so that he could get it. Anyway, so that I like
that. Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Talking with you about it, and I said this in my first thoughts, and I really do think, like, when there's a movie like this where everyone seems to be like, no, this movie's awesome, it just for whatever reason doesn't connect with me, I do just think, well, maybe I just need to give it another shot at some point, because even like one battle after another, I did enjoy it the first time I saw it, but I knew it was going to take a second watch for it to really solidify. And the second time I watched it, I was like, yeah, I love this movie. This movie's awesome.
Yeah.
And I wonder if coming, but it's just that, like, the first couple Safdie films that I saw, Good Time and Uncut Gems, I liked them right away. Yeah. But I also, those are both movies that second time I saw both of those movies, I liked them even more. And so I wonder if this is just one where maybe it just caught me on the wrong evening, and like if I went back to it, I'd go like, oh, this is actually so cool.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, it's totally fine not to like the movie.
Yeah.
The interesting thing about when you watch a movie the first time, there's nothing like it. You know, it's just new and you get excited, especially when you love a movie. The second time you watch a movie is almost as interesting because now your expectations are in line. Mm-hmm. So like a lot of, and this happens to me with a lot of movies, especially with like Pete Docter. You know, the first time I saw Inside Out, I was like, I was expecting to like that a lot more. Mm-hmm. And then the second time I watched it, I knew what to expect. And I was like, that movie was amazing. That like blew me away. But I liked it the first time I saw it. Mm-hmm. And same thing with like Soul. It was the same thing. Once you kind of know what to expect, then you have a different appreciation for the movie. Now, even when there are movies that I don't like, I usually get a little bit more of an appreciation on the second viewing because I know what to expect. So you might, I mean, if anything, you'll at least appreciate it a little more on a second viewing. But if you don't like it, I understand. It's a hard movie to like a character who's not a very good guy.
And
he's not a very good guy.
Yeah. We've gotten a lot of the kind of events here. Obviously he finally convinces Mr. Wonderful Kevin O'Leary to like take him to Japan so that he can try to compete in this tournament, but really the Kevin O'Leary is just like, no, I'm going to take you out there. And what you're going to do is you're going to throw this match against Endo, this exhibition thing. And like, but he's like, I'm not helping you like get into the tournament. And he finds out when he gets there, like he can't compete. Yeah. The guy that's like the head of the International Table Tennis Association is just like, no, like it's too late. And so his only option is to try to like beat Endo in like this exhibition thing that doesn't, but he also knows if I do this, Kevin O'Leary's saying, I'm not flying you home. I'm
You're
like,
stuck.
You're stuck. And he has to like hitch a ride home with the military because they were impressed with his win.
Which I did also, I was like, I thought he was for sure going to say like, oh, I'm sleeping with your wife.
Yeah.
Like when Kevin O'Leary is like, you know, I'm a vampire, which was a weird thing to say, but I kind of liked it. But he's like, I thought he was going to say something about that, but that never happened. Their paths never cross as far as Kevin O'Leary and Gwyneth Paltrow and knowing that he is having an affair with her.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting, but yeah.
Yeah. Really quick before we like wrap it up and go into scores, what were your thoughts about Timothée Chalamet's performance?
I thought he was great. I mean, I bought into it. I was able to, you know, like him or root for him.
Yeah.
I think the best thing as I hinted at before, the best thing is, as you just talked about, he gets a ride, with the military and he seems a little unfulfilled, right? And then he goes back, he sees his mom, he sees Rachel, and she's there, and he's like, it's okay, I'm gonna be here, I'm not going anywhere.
She's given birth, hasn't she?
She has given birth.
Yeah.
And then he goes in and he sees his son, right? And they bring the baby and the baby's crying, and then it like stops and looks at him. And when he like, when he's crying,
yeah,
right, when he breaks down, like that for me is the Oscar moment.
Yeah, sure.
Like he gets what he needs. It's mm-hmm. not, he's not getting what he wants. He just beat Endo. That was what he wanted. What he needs now is to be there for this kid.
Yeah.
And that to me, when he just breaks down, he starts crying. That to me was like, wow, that was pretty amazing. And I expected him to be great for the entire movie. And he was. I mean, it's hard to pull off that type of a character. But that when he starts crying was kind of like, okay, that was really, really good. So I thought he did a great job. I think he is a great actor. I also kind of agree with you though. Like, I think Dune 2 might have been a better performance for me because of how standard that character could be.
Mm-hmm.
How standard a character of his name's Paul. What's Paul Atreides?
Paul Atreides, yeah.
How standard Paul Atreides could be. It's like Russell Crowe in Gladiator.
Yeah.
That could be a very standard, easy character to play, or just like skate by and just like get mm-hmm. a paycheck. But like what Russell Crowe did with Maximus and what Timothée Chalamet did in Dune is like, wow. Like, how can you play that type of character so well? So, but this one, that moment at the end with his child was really, really got me. And the rest of it was awesome. So I think he did an amazing job.
I really want to experience that last moment.
Yeah.
The way that I think it's intended, which is what I think you're right. That the intention is this whole movie, he's been ruthlessly chasing after what he thinks he wants, or what he thinks his life needs, which is like this level of success that's going to prove that he's somebody.
Yeah.
And once he finally like sort of gets it, he kind of is like, well, all right. Then when he sees his kid, it's like, oh, I never, this thing that he's been running from and trying to avoid, that's actually the thing that makes him feel whole. And I want to experience that moment the way that I think most people are, and the way that I think it was intended by Josh Safdie. But the way that I think it landed to me was like this incredible narcissist.
Yeah.
Is literally just like seeing this baby who he's been, who knows what kind of dad he's going to be. But in this moment, he's doing like the stereotypical narcissist thing where he's just like, it's a little me. Like, oh God, I'm my favorite thing in the universe. Yeah, and here's a little, you know, and that's the way it like landed for me, which maybe I think is a little bit of a cynical read on that moment. And I want it to land with the thing of, you know, more Rolling Stones. You can't always get what you want, but if you try sometimes, you might find.
You get what you need.
You get a little baby.
And, you get a little Marty baby.
A little Marty baby. Okay, Marty Supreme. Let's get into our scores. We give scores on this channel out of 10, 10 being the best. We give a score for just the technical achievement of the film, just how well was it constructed at the technical level, a score for the ending, how well did they stick the landing, score for rewatchability, a score for cultural significance, and a score for just our subjective feeling, just how do we subjectively feel about the film. So Kramer, what's your technical score for Marty Supreme?
My technical score is an 8. I mean, it's the way that they create tension in this movie is hard to do, and to sustain it the way that Josh Safdie does that is pretty crazy. But just like you said, the cinematography is awesome, the production design, the costume design, the performances are all good. Even Kevin O'Leary, the good thing that the Safdies do in casting non-professional actors is they always make them play the person that they are, which is a good idea. So Kevin O'Leary is playing himself. He's just playing like, a little different. So
when Kevin Garnett shows up in Uncut Gems, it's like, it's Kevin Garnett
himself. Because doesn't he play Kevin Garnett?
Yeah, he plays Kevin Garnett.
So they're very smart in doing that, and I think they get a lot out of that. And they did so. They're able to do a lot with, and I mean, Timothée Chalamet is going to be amazing. So, but he helped him, obviously. They made it work, and they did it. They made a great performance. And then Benny Safdie with The Rock might be a little more impressive because The Rock isn't as good of an actor as Timothée Chalamet. So it'll be, again, it'll just be interesting to see what happens with all that. But I'm taking some points off as far as technically, because it was a little too long. And like you said, the bathtub falling through the ceiling was definitely something that happens to Marty. But it wasn't anything that he really did, even though they said not to go in the bathtub and he did anyway. But that was also kind of like, it was just a little crazy. And it also seemed to be a little veer away from the main story in a weird way.
And maybe that's all that moment is that, like, the guy said, don't use the shower. And he's just the kind of character that's like, don't tell me what to do. And he goes and does it. And it's like, I told you not to do it, and that sets off this whole chain of events. So maybe, I gave it an 8 as well. Pretty hard to argue that it's not a technically, like, well-constructed film.
Yeah.
Pretty hard to argue that Josh Safdie doesn't have the sauce, like, that, like, him and his team, like, don't know how to make a movie that just feels and looks cool and just, like, and well-made. So I got to give it up to, like, all the department heads and all of the cast. And, you know, I would just say that, yeah, knocking off points a little bit for the screenplay, just, like, for me, not fully winning me over with this character, and also just maybe one too many obstructions to the plot to, like, it just felt a little bit contrived at a certain point, how about the ending?
The ending I gave a 7.5. I think because it was Josh Safdie is subverting expectations, just like you said. But the last game win that he gets against Endo, I thought the exact same thing. I was like, you just won one game and you lost all the others, like, and you barely won it after he's played a bunch of people. Still, but because it's because he then gets the thing with his son, that was the real payoff, right? So I think it was a good ending, and maybe I should give it a little bit more, but I also it was a little hard because I knew where it was going. Like, they're setting up for the tournament, but all he gets is an exhibition and one game in an exhibition. So
you're really winning me over with a lot of your analysis. Like, it's really because I had the ending at a 6, just because I was kind of like, I don't really care. The whole movie's about him trying to get back to fight this guy, play this guy. And I like Endo more than him. And then I don't even feel like the victory that he gets is very good. But then now I'm like, I think that's kind of the point. I think that the point is that, like, the victory is kind of hollow, and that it is a subversion of the expectation, and the true victory is like he has an opportunity now to, like, kind of grow up and maybe and just be a father and make his life about that. And so I'm moving it from a 6 to a 7. How about rewatchability?
Okay. Rewatchability, I gave a 7. I could definitely rewatch it, but man, because of the length, and because it is so tense, I'm taking off just a little bit, because it's like, oh man, this is exhausting. Sometimes it's exhausting to watch those movies that are like that.
I'm giving my rewatchability score, I'm moving it from a 6. It was at 6 because I was like, well, I'm curious to go back. I'm moving it to a 7 just because now I'm like even more, I'm getting sold here. So I'm bumping up. So how about cultural impact?
Cultural impact, I'm putting it an 8. Because it's a big Chalamet performance. He very well could win best actor. I think it's also just a lot of people are responding to this movie. Like, it's making a lot of money for what it is, especially for A24 movies. So I think it is going to have an impact down the line as well. We'll see.
I gave it an 8 as well. I feel like this is a movie that's going to, like, really, like, establish Benny Safdie and Josh
Safdie.
I keep saying Benny, my goodness, Josh Safdie. I feel like, this is going to be like a big feather in his cap as a filmmaker. Yeah. And I think that the film going community and the Chalamet heads out there are really getting what they want from it. And, how about subjective?
My subjective score is an 8.5. I think it was a fun time. Stressful, fun time. And Chalamet gives a good performance. I think that I really liked that it challenged me to figure out what everything means, and all the relationships and kind of all the themes mean. And it also gives you enough to kind of, like, help you make your own conclusions. So I really liked it. I thought it did a great job. I enjoyed the movie.
Yeah. My subjective score is a 6, which is just the honest assessment of how I felt leaving the theater and in the few days afterward as I was thinking about it. After this conversation, though, I am more like, I'm going to have to go back. And that is, when I wrote that 6, I was like, it is subject to, like, could change on a rewatch, could go up. That's just my, you know, honest assessment of how I felt at the end of the first time watching it. But those are our thoughts. So let us know in the comments what you thought about Marty Supreme, what you thought about the Chalamet performance. Is it the GOAT Chalamet performance? Does it deserve all the awards? Is it better than The Rock? Is it better than Michael B. Jordan? Is Josh better than Benny? Who do you like more? And next week on the show, if you want to keep up with what we're doing, we're going to go to the theater and we're going to watch The Bone Temple. Bone Temple is ready. Bone Temple is ready.
Yep. Macho Man Randy Savage.
Macho Man, rest in peace. Hopefully there's a zombie version of Macho Man Randy Savage Bonesaw.
That would be great.
In the Bone Temple. But we're going to go see Bone Temple, which was one of the movies we talked about on last week's episode with our predictions for 2026. If you haven't watched that yet, go check that one out. We break down all of the major releases from this upcoming year and what our predictions are for them and our thoughts on those movies. But if you want to watch along with the show and not have anything spoiled, go see Bone Temple with us and we will break it down next week and we will see you all then.
Bye-bye.